find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. As you can hear, I have a little bit of a cold today, and I'm hoping that it won't get in the way of our having a really good conversation. So welcome. Pull up a chair. It's Super Bowl Sunday, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are online right now, all the time. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. If you're not following me on Twitter, you are, of course, missing, I don't know, maybe half the conversation, maybe a little more today. There's all kinds of really cool Super Bowl stuff going on Twitter. There's previews of some of the commercials, which is, of course, why I watch the Super Bowl. I'm sure you guys actually are probably watching for commercials as well, since, sadly, we don't have a football team in the thing, in the game today. But whether or not you're watching, there's been so much interesting news going on this week that I feel like we have to take a step back and take a look, because I think we saw an inflection point this week that's so interesting and so meaningful that if I didn't call attention to it, I wouldn't be doing my job for you. And I want you to comment on it. You know, the lines are open, 404-872-0750. We are going to talk today, of course, about what's happening with mortgage interest rates. They went up. That's the highlight here. But it's all part of the same thing. This week, we saw two really big things happen. Number one, the Dow passed 14,000 for the first time in I don't know how long, really long time. I can't understate that enough. The all-time high, 14,165. That is the record. We closed Friday at 14,009.79, up 113 points. It's nothing short of astonishing, really. Because at the very same time that we went up and passed 14,000, we also saw the economy contract in the fourth quarter. Economy contracted slightly, minus a tenth of a percent. But what happened in the fourth quarter, right? We all felt the economy stall. We all felt we were taking a step back, but nobody could quite put their fingers on it. Well, what happened was the government had cut back on its spending. What does that tell you about where we are? It tells you that the government stepping back its spending, right? This is the whole debt discussion that we've had for the last year. You cut back on the debt by cutting back on spending. You cut back on spending, and you want the economy to have grown strong enough to have actually made up the difference, but it didn't. And so we saw in the fourth quarter the economy fall back by a tenth of a percent. It went negative. Because we're just not there yet. Because the illusion that we have built up around us, that the economy is somehow back on track and full speed ahead, and we're going to see, you know, housing boom, and we're going to see prices go up, and we're going to see more money in our pockets, it didn't happen. It hasn't happened yet. And so the economy fell back. Now, we also, let me just elaborate on that for just a moment. To see both of those things together at exactly the same week, I thought was pretty amazing, because the Dow, of course, is always supposed to be a leading indicator. It's not what's happening now. It's what's going to happen 6 months from now, or 9 months from now, or a year from now. And yet, we're seeing also a vision of what could happen to the economy if we kick out the stools underneath it and we cut spending. Cut spending, those are jobs. People get out of work. People get fired. We actually saw a number of companies saying that they were going to lay off significant numbers of people again in the next couple of weeks. So fourth quarter domestic product contracted a tenth of a percent. It's the first time in 3 years. It's not an official recession, folks. I have been telling you for months and months that we were going to have another recession. One contraction in a quarter is not a recession. That does not a recession make. You need two to have an official recession. Right? But it was a surprising result. It was well below market expectations. And even though it was defense spending and slower inventory gains, and even though some chief economists said that the underlying tone was better than the headline, GDP growth may only trend about 2% this year. They're already downsizing expectations. Now, I'm not saying we're going to have a recession this time. What I'm saying is what has come true. When you cut spending, people don't have money in their pockets, and they can't go out and spend money that they don't have. It's just, it's kind of like the physical reality of job creation. It's just how it works. Now, we also saw a really mixed payroll number, right? So we saw non-farm payrolls rise by about 157,000 in January, and the jobless rate ticked up by a tenth of a percent to about 7.9%. The results of the prior 2 months also got revised up. And what did the Fed do? The Fed said, we're going to still buy back mortgage securities at a total of $85 billion. That's with a B, $85 billion a month. So the Fed is adding to its balance sheet quite a lot. We've got jobs starting to be created. You know, 157,000 is about the magic number, folks. You've got to have about 150,000 to 175,000 jobs being created in this country every single month on a net basis just to keep pace with population growth. You've got to do that. So we're just about breaking even. Why did the unemployment rate go up? It went up because people said, oh, Joe got a job. I bet I could finally get a job. It's been 2 years, but I bet I could get a job. And so they go back officially into the workforce pool, which means more people are looking for jobs. It's not like a huge increase in the number of jobs out there, but more people are looking, and so the percentage goes up. People want to work. They absolutely want to work. So this was really an interesting week, right? Getting to the number that we are all going to, and there were other numbers too this week. Did you notice? It supports the same thing. We keep hearing about the tremendous growth in the new housing industry. They're having tremendous growth, up 15% from last year. Okay. Remember what last year was? Last year was the second worst year ever for new home construction since they've been keeping records in this country. Worst, second worst year. I mean, are you kidding me? This country built 300,000 new homes in a year and we're celebrating? No. No. So, yeah, we're up from the very bottom. But we're still, you know, 80% down from the top. Still a housing depression out there. It isn't kicking in the way it needs to kick in. We're just not seeing it yet. And so when you have a contraction in the economy, and by the way, Europe is doing worse. Europe's not doing any better. I know that everybody says, well, Europe's not that big a part. Europe, don't kid yourselves. Europe is a really big part of what's going on here. Now, what's really interesting, another really interesting thing that happened this week, is that mortgage interest rates started to tick up. Now, why did they tick up when the Fed said it was going to hold on to its asset buying program? It reaffirmed its commitment to holding the Fed funds rate, which everything is tied to, all the way down at near zero for at least through 2014. Why did mortgage interest rates tick up? It's such a great question. The reason is that we're seeing people buy less, right? So they're going out and they're not buying at the same level they were. That's why the Fed is still buying, right? It's trying to keep demand steady. It's trying to keep prices where they want to be. But you see bond traders get nervous, and they're nervous about what's going on all over the world, and interest rates started to tick up. It's fascinating. So we're not out of where we were. The economy hasn't magically turned the corner. What we have seen, and what I've been saying to you, is I feel like we are seeing the bottom. We are seeing the economy start to come back to itself. It is such a slow progress, though. It isn't going to happen overnight. I wish it were going to happen overnight. I wish that you and I would see a complete reversal of fortune and people would be able to go out and get the jobs they want, buy, get the mortgages they want, the houses they want, the cars they want, send their kids to the school they want. That's really what a healthy economy looks like. We have choices and we have options. Neither is really true right now for the vast majority of people. Yes, the 1, the 2, the 5%, they've got all the choices in the world. It's fine. I have choices. But not everybody listening to the show right now has choices. And in a really good working market, capitalistic economy, everybody would have choices, or most everybody would have choices. And that's what we want to see come back into the system. Some semblance of choice. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ray joins us on the line. Hey, Ray.
Good to speak with you, Elise.
It's nice to have you on the show.
And
thanks
for joining. I really do enjoy your show.
Thank you.
But I've always been wanting to ask this question. If I've been out of work for 2 years, and I decide next week that my neighbor got a job, so I'm going to go out and look for a job, how does anybody know I'm looking? How does the government quantify that figure?
So it's, you know, it's all an estimate. I hate to say it, life is an estimate. So the way it works is that, and this may not have happened to you, but people actually go out and they knock on doors and they say, are you working? Are you looking for a job? And that's kind of how it happens. And there are two different surveys going on at the same time. One of them is, how long have you been out of work? Right? And the other one is, you know, are you looking? And what job did you just get? And so there's more than two surveys, but there's sort of two big competing surveys. And what some brainiac did was kind of put those two things together in a way that they could make an estimate out of what the unemployment rate looks like.
Okay,
so,
I was wondering if there was some secret algorithm they were using
to divine that. It's math stuff,
well,
all the way.
Is there a possibility of getting a bunch of people together and just walk around with signs in front of every capital in the country saying, U6, 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 the real story?
Yeah, it would be a good thing to do. You know that if you've listened to the show for a long time, you know I'm a big believer in the U6. But I have to say that number is actually coming down a little bit, which is encouraging, finally.
Right?
Because it was about 17-something percent at the high. I think we're now in the low 15% level
for it. Yeah, I was thinking
14-something. Yeah, like 14.7.
Right.
So,
but nevertheless, it's an awfully big figure.
It's a huge number.
Okay, well, I thank you very much, dear.
You're welcome, Ray. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good Super Bowl Sunday today. 404-872-0750 is our number, 1-800-WSB-TALK. It is 20 minutes past the hour. We're going to have a little real estate insight with Rhonda Duffy. And then we're going to take your questions about mortgage interest rates, what's going on with your financial life. We are rebuilding America here on the Elise Kling Show. One house at a time, and today we're going to start with yours. All right? Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more. I'm Elise Klink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. Let's start with yours. Follow me online at Twitter, at Glink, G-L-I-N-K. It's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. Rhonda Duffy. .com is where you'll be able to find her blog. Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So I understand that you give your buyers a cash bonus. What do you actually mean by that? I mean, anybody who walks through the door, you give them a bonus?
Well, yes. Well, right. If they buy, you know. I think it's really important that buyers participate in the process. And although agents are still being paid the same amount for buyer-agent commission, this hasn't come down like other models have brought the listing side down. You know, buyers are doing most of the work. If you talk to any buyer out there, they're going to say, well, I found the house. And where do they find it? They find it on the Internet. So if the buyer's participating in the transaction by doing the searching and the calling, which, of course, there's things you need to know about calling out listings, buyers. But if they're doing the work, why wouldn't we pay them? I mean, that keeps them in the game. They have less resentment toward what an agent makes. It allows them to do the work that ultimately benefits them. And I think it's great. So we give our buyers $500 when they help us find their home.
So how do you measure how much they're actually doing?
Well, you know, it's amazing to me because over the last 10 years, you can't hook up with a buyer who doesn't say, yeah, I saw that. I saw that online. We've already driven by that. Yeah, we know of that property. I mean, buyers are just so into it that I don't even think it's about how much do you measure, how much they're doing. I think they're doing it. They are finding the properties that they want to buy, and they typically look online, pull their list down. Again, there's dangers to doing that, so we need to talk about that in another time. But, you know, pull down the list of what they want to see. They go drive by, then they tell their agent what they want to see. And they usually know the taxes, the school zone. You know, some of my buyers who have contracted with us early have the 7 key questions to ask the neighbor, so they're stopping people who are walking their dog. I mean, it's just critical.
So they're doing their work. And when they hire you, do you tell them, if you do some of this, we're going to give you a bonus?
Yes.
And they must like that.
They love it. We've given back $3 million so far.
Wow. Not all in 1 year.
No, not all in 1 year, but we'd like to do that this year.
Well, I hope you do as well. You know, I'm always about putting more money in people's pockets. Leaves them with more things to spend in other places.
That's right.
Rhonda Duffy, Duffy Realty of Atlanta. You've got more of this on your blog, I expect.
Yes, I do.
All right, so check it out at rhondaduffy.com. It's been Real Estate Insight. We'll talk to you again next week.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Elise Klink, Rebuilding Your House, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Let's start with yours. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Remember those walls I built? Well, baby, they're tumbling down. Didn't even put up a fight.
34 minutes past the hour, 11:34 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Hey, if you haven't gone to the Equifax Finance blog lately, which is one of our little projects that we work on at ThinkLink, I think you'll be really excited to see what's going on. In our real estate section, there are all kinds of stories that we've been posting about a real estate investing forecast. And one of our bloggers, Steve Cook, who used to be head of corporate communications for the National Association of Realtors, said in his post this week, he does believe that for real estate investing, the best is yet to come. And last year was this incredible change for real estate investors. And right now it's about 20% of all homes sold are sold to real estate investors, right? And investing shortfalls, inventory shortfalls, right, is what is driving price increases. Really interesting. So go, I'm going to tweet out this link, it's such a great story. Real estate, you know, Steve Cook is just knows this stuff inside and out. But that's kind of the level of stuff that we do in the Equifax Finance blog. So I'm calling out Steve Cook today. He's also been a guest on the show. He's just a great guy. But I want you to go there and take advantage of all of the experts that we have. It's free. We're just launching a small business blog. I told you at the beginning of the year we were going to provide tools for small business owners. We have started that on the Equifax Finance blog as well. And I'm so excited to have you share with that. And more good things to come, I promise. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are Rebuilding America one house at a time here on the Elise Glink Show. Paul joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, Paul.
Hey, How are you doing?
You know, good. A little bit of a cold. Looking forward to Super Bowl commercials. What about you?
Yeah, me too. I'm in advertising, so that's always a good thing.
It is. How can I help?
Well, I had a question for my mother. She, her husband just passed away, unfortunately. But she's 68 years old and had just received a $100,000 life insurance payout for him. Of course, at her age, naturally, she'd be risk-averse at investing, but she's just inherently risk-averse at all. She has a good teacher's pension and everything, and she has about $140,000 house that she likes. We thought about money markets, but I've got some details, and I just wanted to see if you thought possibly refinancing her home and dumping a lot of that into it would be a good idea. Her interest rate right now is probably about 5.5%, and she owes about $80,000 left on that $140,000 home. Mm-hmm. Now, she wants to pay off small debt, you know, cars and things like that, and then save about $40,000 for emergency repairs. But I was thinking she could probably take the loose $40,000 and get probably a 2% interest rate on a 15-year mortgage and just save a whole lot of money and have a better month-to-month cash flow situation. And I just haven't asked anybody who knows better than myself if they thought that was a good idea for someone at her age.
Well, I love the idea for people who are retired to have better cash flow, because better cash flow or the money that's running in and out of the household, that just translates into all things good. If she then wants to go get a pedicure, she doesn't have to think about it. If she wants to take a trip and visit her grandchildren, she doesn't have to think about it. Or if she was like my Grandma Betty, these odd checks for $25 would turn up in my, you know, my mailbox at college, you know, with, you know, a nice little poem and take yourself to dinner, honey, with a friend.
Yes.
Those kinds of moments are the things that build memories.
Yeah.
Paying mortgage payments, not so much.
Yeah, and I know, I mean, she's not quite at the age where she's looking to dump assets. I know I've heard of other people, you know, maxing out their tax, you know, tax-free gifts and things like that. But the small things she already does, and I know she enjoys those, I'd say she's comfortably retired, but she likes the idea of having a large nest egg, but she also likes the idea of putting it to work. And I just didn't know if doing a refi with those optimized or optimal figures was something that sounded good to a professional.
Well, it sounds good, but let's talk about it a little bit deeper, right? So she has a 5.5% loan. How many years left does she have?
She's been there 8 years on a 30-year mortgage.
So she's got 22 years left.
Yeah.
So, you know, for my four parts of the home run refinance, one of them is lower the interest rate, and you know you can do that.
Yeah.
Number two is shortening the loan term.
Yep.
Okay. Third is, can you actually pay less each month?
Yes, yep.
Okay. And then the fourth thing is managing the closing costs.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about, so first of all, it's very difficult to get loans for $40,000, $50,000 these days.
Okay, lower quantities are harder?
It's a little bit harder under $50,000.
Okay.
Let's just say you could get a $50,000 loan. And I know that lenders in Atlanta are used to that simply because prices have fallen so low.
Okay.
Right?
And she is in, just in case it matters, she's in coastal South Carolina near Hilton Head.
Okay. So she's in coastal South Carolina. You'll have to check with local lenders there.
Okay.
But they've also been hit, especially in Hurricane Alley these days, right? So let's just assume she can get a $50,000 loan for about 2.5% on a 10-year. She might even get a 10-year.
Yeah.
That would be, I think, a good move all the way around for her, as long as she's paying a little bit less than she was.
Yeah.
But 68 isn't very old. It would be great for her at 78 to be completely done with this mortgage.
Yeah, exactly.
And she does have the cash. She'd be able to pay it off if she ever wanted to.
Yeah. That's true.
But I love her idea. She's conservative, but that's fine, to have a big chunk of money somewhere just in case.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because medical expenses can come up, other kinds of expenses can come up, and she may want that. Now, does her teacher's pension provide for enough for the month? Does she use it all up? Does she have a little left over? What is her
situation? I think she has a little left over. I don't think she's having to dip into any long-term savings or anything.
Mm-hmm.
She lives pretty modestly and has a small, easy-to-maintain home. I think she's done everything well in terms of preparing to live at this age. I know she would save money for possible repairs to the home, but she's not looking to make any major upgrades or you know, move to a new property or anything. So
you need to investigate what it would actually cost for her to refinance.
Yeah.
And what the savings is for that. And if you could get the refinance even at, let's say, 2.5% or 3% on a 10 or 15 year, I'd go for 10 year if you can.
Yeah.
And she's still going to pay a lot less because she's going from a 5.5% to 2% or 3%, but it's on a smaller amount of money.
Yeah.
So she will save money each month.
Yeah.
That to me sounds like a home run, even if you end up paying, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 for it.
So it sounds like if we get into the nitty gritty of it and figure out what expenses are, it sounds like it's a good idea as long as we are lowering the term, get to a 15 or 10 year, and just make sure she's not paying more per month.
Correct.
On the mortgage.
Right. You just want to lower the term, lower the interest rate, lower the monthly payment, and watch your closing costs. Those four things make up my home run refinance.
Gotcha. Well, she's got plenty of time to find a lender who's willing to play ball. So long as rates stay low, it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, definitely think it's worth investigating, Paul.
Great. I appreciate it. Thanks for your help.
You're very welcome. Enjoy the Super Bowl. 43 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Eric joins us on the line. Hey, Eric.
Hey, how's it going?
You know, it's good. I'm looking forward to those commercials. What about you?
I know. I'm only trying to Google them, see if I can get heads up on them.
I know. It's always hard in my office the day after Super Bowl Sunday if I haven't watched the commercials because everybody's talking about it.
I know, and I'm in my truck all day, so I really can't watch them or talk
right.
to anybody, really.
Well, how can I help today?
Well, I'm in bankruptcy right now. I'm in my third year of it, so I've got two more years to go.
Yep.
And I kept my house, and they consolidated all my bills. I'm on a full 100% payback.
Okay.
On it. The problem is I've had to go to court twice because the mortgage company, which is now held either by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, has said I've never made my payments.
Really?
So, we'll go like 4 or 5 months, and then we'll go to court, and I have all the proof that I paid it, and then it got posted somewhere to where it didn't get posted to my account.
Okay,
so
that's annoying.
Yes, twice. I've had to take off work, go down there, and then it just gets thrown out because I show all the proof. I saw it. Pay all my payments. You cash all my checks.
Right, but it doesn't seem like it's getting fixed at the highest level, right?
No. And what it is I'm at 7.24%.
Wow.
Yes. And I can't find a mortgage company that'll work with me. Am I going to have to wait till my bankruptcy is over to refi?
Well, you will have to wait until you're out of, till the bankruptcy closes. And it might be some time after that to refinance, but it's pretty irritating that they're not able to do just this small little thing right, which is make sure that your stuff gets posted correctly. But it isn't Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It's actually your bank. The servicer is not posting things correctly, and then it gets reported back.
Yeah, so it's very frustrating, and there's nothing to do. How long will I have to wait, about a year after?
A year or two, but maybe I can help get this settled a little bit better. Who is your bank?
Presently, it's City.
City is doing the servicing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
City
is a letter saying that Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac actually owns the loan now.
Yeah, but that's not unusual. They do own it, but that they're not servicing it, and it's the servicer who's not crediting things correctly.
Yeah.
So the good news for you is that Citi is regulated by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency underneath the Treasury.
Okay.
They have a website called helpwithmybank.gov. Helpwithmybank.gov. In the right-hand corner, it says, need more help? There's a blue box. Contact the customer assistance group. File a complaint.
Okay.
You can file a complaint there. That will allow you to detail exactly what you've told me, and you may even be able to attach something that as proof. So I want you to state your case pretty clearly and just say, can they help you get your bank in order so that they're actually reporting this stuff correctly? Because when you're done, you don't want to be reported as going 5 months without making a payment.
Oh, yeah.
If it happened once, I would say, you know what, things happen. But twice?
Yeah, twice.
Not so good.
I thought I was going to lose my home the second time.
Yeah.
I mean, I was nervous as can be, and then we didn't actually go to court. They actually, my lawyer got involved, and he stood up for me and got it resolved. So we didn't have to go to court. But
okay, but I want you to go there and file a complaint. The other thing you can do is, are you a Georgia resident?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can go to the Georgia Department of Banking and Finance as well.
Mm-hmm.
They should have an ombudsman. They've had one. I think they have one now. And you can explain the problem, and they also regulate city on the statewide level.
Okay.
And they should be able to press your case with city as well, or at least give you a better number to call. But the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency would like to know that this is not getting done correctly, and there's some sort of glitch in what they've done.
Yeah.
And I want you to go there, okay?
Okay. As far as... in the beginning, before even, I tried to work with them before I went into bankruptcy because I had a drastic pay cut.
Yeah.
But I still wanted to keep my house. I still wanted to be honest on my house. I didn't want it, you know, to lose it. So they were giving deals left and right, 2% off, you know, for like 5 years or something like that. I couldn't even get them to work with me on that.
No, and now that you're in bankruptcy, you won't.
Yeah, they still...
But the bankruptcy thing is killing you. But you know what? You're going to work your way out of it. And
well, yeah, I'm going to come out so much further ahead. It's,
you are.
It's amazing.
And interest rates are still going to be low in 2 years.
Okay.
So
they're not moving.
Not anytime soon. Not when the economy's contracting. No.
Well, that's true.
It's not. We're not heading exactly in the right location and in the right direction. And I have to say that even all the wishing, like we could just be positive thinking people, it's not going to make something happen that isn't destined to happen. Like I just don't believe that. I believe that. We're still at a really dicey place in the economy, and when I talk about rebuilding America one house at a time, you know, you're the one house right now. You know, we want to get your house in order. So the way
I didn't want to lose it and be like everybody else.
Yeah, we don't want you to lose your house. I want you to keep your house. So you went into bankruptcy, and it's unfortunate that you're paying like 3% higher than you probably need to be, or 4%. Actually, it's only about 2% because you're at 7-something, and if you... you know, if you still had sort of mediocre credit, you probably would only get about 4.5 to 5%. So you could do better. I'm not saying you can't do better.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you won't be able to do better right now. But in the meantime, you are getting yourself back on track and you are organizing and you are moving forward and you're taking steps and you're rebuilding your house, your financial life, you're rebuilding your physical house. You're keeping your family together, and that's hugely commendable. And it's what this show is all about, rebuilding America one house at a time, and we're starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink. It's Super Bowl Sunday. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
It's 11:53 News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks so much for joining us today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinklink.com. If you haven't signed up for our free weekly newsletter, you are missing out. We actually sent off a second newsletter this week with some other interesting things. We're just changing it all up this year. We want to give you more help. We want to help you rebuild your house, financial house, your physical house, family house, all kinds of things as we rebuild America one house at a time. And we really just want to start with yours. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Susan joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Susan. Susan?
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us today.
A little
technology issue. What can I tell you?
Okay. What I was calling about is that some friends of mine know that I've been looking at townhomes and condos that are for sale, but they say they're concerned that several of them are rented, that I wouldn't be able to get a mortgage because they say something about a 30% rule or something.
It might even be less than the 30% rule. So let's back up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Are you thinking about buying this to live in?
Yes.
Okay. And is this something you've wanted to do for a while?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. And what is it that, have you been looking at a particular building or neighborhood or what?
Well, I've been looking at the Midtown and Morningside area, yeah, here in Atlanta.
Okay. And are the prices about where you think they should be?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think they've gone down from where they were.
They have. Oh, they have.
You know, so that's why I was looking at buying, but then, you know, I'm concerned. I haven't looked at getting a mortgage yet, but...
Are you working with a real estate agent?
No, I'm not.
So how are you looking at these different houses? Are you looking online?
I'm looking online, and I'm driving around.
Okay. So it's time for you to get serious, Susan. If you really are serious, you've got to get in there, because your friends are right. So to buy a property in a townhome development or a condo building, and if you need a mortgage, the lenders want to see a very small percentage of units occupied by renters or tenants. They want to see the vast majority occupied by owners like you.
Uh-huh.
So if some cases it might be 30% can only be renters. In some cases it might only be 20%.
Oh.
Sometimes the building has its own numbers of what they will allow for tenants, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and FHA, which guarantee 99 or 97% of all the loans out there, the three of them together, maybe 96%, they want to see that owners are really occupying. So you've got to find out what those numbers really are.
Oh, okay.
And the real estate agent that you hire should know that information.
Oh, all right.
And they'll know what properties are selling for. And on top of that, you're going to have money for a down payment and all the rest. So I'm asking you, are you ready to get serious about buying? Because you've got to make sure you can get a mortgage. You've got to make sure the lender will lend in the areas that you're interested in,
uh-huh,
and the development you're interested in. And there are a whole bunch of steps you have to take.
Well, those are some of the ones that I've looked at and asked about, and looked at online. They don't have any association. They're fee simple.
Then that's great. Then you don't have to worry about it. Because
you don't have to worry about whether or not they rent it or not?
No, because then if it's fee simple, it's like a single family house.
Oh, okay. So
fee simple is good. Fee simple is good. Unless there's... What you're really trying to do is, if it was all connected and a townhouse was being treated as a condo, that's where you would have more of an issue. But if it's fee simple, think about it in a subdivision. It's a subdivision of single family houses. They're all fee simple. And who cares whether the house next door to you is rented? They really care if your house is rented. So if you're buying this house to live in, that is a different thing. If it's a condo building,
mm-hmm,
and 40% of them are rented, that's a problem.
So in other words, if they're, townhomes are generally attached to each other.
Physical attachment doesn't mean anything if the homes are fee simple. So again, it's time for you to get serious, Susan. If you really want to buy this, it's time to step out of what you think is going on and get into the know. And you need to hire a great real estate agent who is going to be able to walk you through this process and help you understand what you're buying and what the lender is going to do. You got to find a great lender who can tell you, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do. It's time to get serious. Because we are rebuilding America one house at a time, Susan. And we're going to start with this one that you want to buy. And I want to see you buy it this year. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenn. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 12:06. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. We're going to start with yours. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. You'll have to forgive my voice. I'm a little bit stuffed up today. I've got a cold. I think I'm happy it's not the flu, which seems to be what everybody else has. So good news there. Online, all the time. If you're not following us on Twitter, you are missing half that conversation. At Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I got a tweet just a few minutes ago asking me if I knew who to contact at Wells Fargo to buy a first mortgage note. And the answer is I don't. I wish I did. But if somebody out there does, please retweet it so that we can answer everybody's questions and help everybody move forward. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Let's go back to the phone line. Steve joins us on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Good, thanks. What's going on?
Well, my question's on refinance. I received an appraisal a few months ago, and I'm appraising for $130,000 and I owe $198,000.
That's pretty good. Better than the reverse. Oh, I'm sorry. You said you were appraising for $130,000 and you owe $198,000?
Unfortunately.
Oh, gosh. That's such a big difference that I was thinking to myself, oh, well, at least that's good.
I was hoping all of a sudden that was a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's not. I just made a mistake. Must be the stuffed head. So that's terrible. So you're underwater about $60,000.
Yeah, and I don't qualify for HARP because I refinanced in December of 2009. And my question, of course, is there anything else out there available, or is there anything that you might be hearing of that might be coming down the line that would be helpful to me?
I don't think so. The problem, of course, is that HARP has been the only... There's no lender out there that's going to refinance when your house is worth less than what you owe, unless you're willing to put in the $60,000, $70,000 that's missing, which is a huge amount. I don't know if you've got that or you're willing to do that.
No, not really. I mean... You know, the rate's not that bad. It's just under 5%, but I do owe 27 years on a 30-year refinance. I was just hoping to drop it to at least 20 and drop the rate a little bit.
Yeah. Have you gone back to your lender directly?
No. I didn't really think they would be willing to help since they're probably happy with the fact I'm making payments.
Well, you are making payments, but are you going to continue to make payments?
Well, of course. Yeah, I'm not going to let the house go. It's
okay.
A good property.
So... The problem is that to get their help, you probably would have to show you're unable to make those payments. So they're not going to do that.
Right. Yeah.
But it never hurts to ask. Sometimes, do you happen to have you don't have an FHA loan, do you?
No.
FHA loans, sometimes they're just lowering interest rate. On a streamlined refinance. It's still worth asking the question, is there anything that you can do for me?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they will say, you know what, we'll lower your interest rate just a little bit. But I don't think you're going to qualify for any new programs. There's really no appetite in Washington right now for this.
Right.
There was very little anyway. And with all the deficit talk and what has to go on, you know, pushing more of this stuff down the throat of the lenders is just not what anybody in D.C. seems to want to do. So, unfortunately, I don't have good news for you.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Well, hang in there, because just because there's nothing available now doesn't mean there won't be anything available 6 months from now. It really depends on what happens with the economy. If things turn sour with the economy again, and we did see this contraction in the fourth quarter... If for some reason that continues, then other options may become available. And you know if they are, we'll talk about them here on the Elise Glink Show. 404-872-0750. Roberta joins us on the line. Hey, Roberta.
Hello. I have a very quick question for you.
All right.
I know right after January the 1st, everybody was saying, do not file your taxes. It was even on the news, and Clark Howard talked about it. You know, don't file your taxes yet. Because the IRS wasn't ready for it.
Right.
Well, I'm now getting all these emails from all these people wanting me, you know, to go online and file my taxes with them, you know, like TurboTax. And they're saying it's now safe, but I'm afraid to do it yet.
Okay.
Is it safe to file my taxes?
So, Roberta, officially the IRS opened for business this week.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go. It's not about safe or not safe. It was they just weren't open for business. And for some people, they're not going to be open for business for another 2 to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
There are different kinds of there just were so many tax changes, and they're busy coding all those changes into the tax returns. Now, are you using TurboTax?
Yes, I am.
Did you download all the latest updates?
I'm sorry, pause.
Did you download all the latest updates?
No, I haven't.
Your taxes may not be ready to file. You have to download all the updates on TurboTax.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, too, have had to change all of their systems to comply with the latest tax changes.
Right.
So the first thing you have to do is download the updates. Then, then you can file your taxes. And, yes, it is safe and it's open for business, and they're waiting and ready for it.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much, because I hadn't heard anybody officially say, go ahead and do it.
Nope.
Any of the people on the radio. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Roberta. They would be happy to take your money, I promise. It's 1212-404-872-0750, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. Let's start with Fred. Hey, Fred, welcome to the program.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What can I do for you today?
Well, I need some direction, financial direction.
I'm good with direction, north, south, east, or west.
Well, what I got, my mortgage is 5.3. I owe about $93,000 on it, but it's appraised around $89,000, something like that. And I got a 15-year mortgage at the beginning, so I got 7 years left on the house. Like I said, it's a 5.3 rate. And I have problems finding people to give me a 5 or 2.5 interest rate and refinance, so I can save money. And I didn't know what to do. And also, I got a 10th grade and 12th grade start college next year. This year, actually.
Whoa, slow down, Fred. You're maybe a little nervous being on the air, but I can't understand what you're saying. Slow down a little bit. So you've got 7 years left on a 15-year loan. You owe $93,000, but you think the house is only worth $89,000?
Yeah, $89,000, something
like that. Has the house fallen 50% in value? What did you start out at?
160.
Okay, so roughly, you started out at 160, and you owe $93,000, but the house is worth $89,000, or roughly half of where you started?
Roughly, on the last statement, it was like somewhere in that range. I haven't checked in the past month or so. But
so I'm confused, but when you talk about appraised value, who's appraising it?
The county.
Okay, tax appraisals are irrelevant for mortgage appraisals.
Oh.
Those are two separate and completely different things.
Okay, well, in that case, is it wise to try to refinance, or what should I do?
Well, let's talk about this a little bit, okay? Because you're confused about... Now, I'm not saying your house hasn't fallen 50% in value. It might have fallen 70% in value. You don't know what your house is worth. To find out what your house is worth, you have to look around your neighborhood and see what homes are selling for. So when you step on your front porch, Fred, how many foreclosures can you see?
I see one.
And is that house listed for sale?
It has a sign for sale and for rent, both.
And what is the price that it is listed at?
It don't have a listing price on the sign.
Did you call?
No, ma'am, I didn't.
Why not?
I will.
You bet you will. Because that house, if you can see a foreclosure right off of your front stoop, that foreclosure price point is what is pegged to your price point. That's where you know what your house is really worth. So if that house is for sale for $20,000 and it's not selling, your house isn't worth $89,000. It might only be worth $20,000. And if there is no low bottom price, or if it's even less than what you owe, unless you have an FHA loan or you have a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, certain kind of loan?
A VA loan, military.
You have a what?
VA, military.
You have a VA loan. So you may be able to get the VA to lower your interest rate, but maybe not. So you would have to refinance out of a VA loan, but if you're underwater, you're not going to be able to do that. So you're not going to be able to refinance.
So I'm just sit tight with it.
No, 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 Fred. What I'm saying is you have so many unanswered questions, questions that I can't answer for you. How much is the foreclosed house listed for? What is the true appraised value of your property? You know, what kind of loan do you have? And if it's you have a VA loan, what does that allow you to do? And will your lender lower the interest rate in a streamlined VA refinance? There may be a way for you to just get your interest rate lowered from 5.3 to 4.5. So at least you're paying a little bit less. In another couple of years, if you're truly at about 89, 90,000, you're almost at parity. In another year, you're going to be back on the right side of that loan, and refinancing will be easier. But you've got a whole long list of questions that you've got to get through so you understand what you should do.
Right.
Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
So I can't say to you, go refinance, because I don't know if you can refinance.
I don't think I can, because I've called several people, and they just kind of dropped the ball on me. Just don't hear from them. Said that it wouldn't be advantageous to them to refinance, since I only got 7 years left.
That's irrelevant. 7 years is irrelevant. $93,000 left to pay off is more relevant. They'll give you a new 15-year loan. They'll give you a 10-year loan. They'll give you a 30-year loan. I think you don't really understand what you're asking for. So when you call these lenders, you aren't asking the right questions. That's my sense. So what I want you to do is educate yourself. I want you to read up on refinancing. And there are four parts to my home run refinance. Four parts. Number one, can you lower the interest rate? Number two, can you lower your monthly payment? Number three, can you shorten your loan term? In your case, I don't think so. And number four, can you manage your closing costs so the whole thing makes sense? Four parts to a home run refinance. Okay? When you call a lender, what you're asking for is, what can you do for a VA loan? Can you just streamline, refinance, and just drop the interest rate on the VA loan? Not pulling the appraisal, not doing anything else, not looking at my income, just lower it. And the answer should be yes. And if you go on the VA.gov website, you should find out information about streamline refinance. So that's one piece. You want to do a new complete refinance and add three more years and get a 10-year loan at 2.5%, you probably could do that. You're adding on interest. You may be able to do that. That is going to depend how much equity you really have in the property. That's probably not going to be your best bet. The best bet is going to be, can you do a streamlined refinance for a VA loan? And that's the question that you probably want to ask lenders. And you want to go online to va.gov and figure out what that looks like so that you have the exact words, the exact verbiage that the lender wants to hear. Because if you're not talking the lender's language, they're not going to be able to come back and talk to you. They're lenders. You have to work it so that it works for you. All right? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. It's 20 minutes past the hour. I think we've got a prize pack we're giving away. So stay tuned for that and more of your questions next. Here on the Elise Klink Show on News Talk WSB. There was a time. It's 25 minutes past the hour. It's time for our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The value this week, $189. It includes a four-pack of tickets to the North Atlanta Home Show, February 15th to the 17th at the Gwinnett Center, and a maintenance agreement for two complete HVAC tune-ups, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating, $189. Both of those pretty helpful, I would imagine. We will give those to the fifth caller at 404-741-0750, 404-741-0750. Good luck. All right, let's do a quick call and see what's going on with BK. Hey, BK, what's going on with you?
Hey, I have a quick question for you. I am retired. I am in the house for the last 18 years. It was a brand new house, and I'm planning to move to a condominium or townhouse and planning to sell in next 2 or 3 years. Would it be advisable to renovate it first or to give option to the buyer to renovate according to their choice and give them some discount or cash incentive?
Right. So it's a great question whether you should do the work or make somebody else do the work.
Exactly.
I would tell you that most people don't want to do the work. They want it done. They would like it done the way they would have wanted it done, but they want it done. They want to walk in and be done, mostly because they can finance all those changes. When you start giving cash credits for things, it's a big pain in the neck. Now, I know you probably don't want to do the work either. That's why you're willing to give a cash credit. But somebody walks in and the house needs to be totally renovated, they're just going to walk out and go down the street because there's 100 other houses that already have the work done. You're competing against the best. You don't ever compete against the worst. And the problem is you probably take a really big, deep discount, much deeper than just the cost of making the improvements, because somebody has to put in the pain and the sweat equity and the pain in the neck of having to actually do it. Understand?
I got your point.
So,
now, my thinking was that, like a carpet, for example, for 18 years we have not replaced the carpet. So if I change the carpet of my own color or on my choice, people may not like it or they want
to... Yeah, but so choose something neutral. Neutral always works. Some sort of really neutral beige or a neutral gray.
Right.
Just don't pick like hot pink carpet. Hot pink shag carpet is totally the wrong way to go. I promise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you pick something that has really good neutral taste. If you don't know what that looks like, go to any new home subdivision and look at the model homes, and you will see what neutral good taste looks like, because they spend a whole lot of money identifying that and doing it. That's what you want to get to. Neutral, great taste. And everybody with matching paint, and everybody's going to think your house is a standout. 50 minutes past the hour. 12:28. 28 minutes past the hour. I'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
I looked at them so deep in your eyes. I touched on you more and more.
12:35 on the Elise Glenn Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Let's start with yours. Let's think about your taxpayer house. So the IRS officially opened for business this week, and that was already like 2 weeks later than normal. But for some people, you're not going to be able to file your taxes for quite another few weeks. There are just so many updates and changes to the tax code that the IRS, TurboTax, MacinTax, all the guys that are out there, H&R Block, they're all very, very busy updating their computer systems to reflect all of these changes. Now, about 70 or 80% of people will file electronically this year. So you definitely want to do that. Another thing to be worried about, tax fraud. And I don't mean like cheating on your tax return. What I mean is tax identity theft fraud. Tax identity fraud, where people get a hold of your Social Security number and they file a tax return in your name, fake the numbers, collect whatever refund is due. You go to file and the IRS says, hey, you've already filed with us, we're a little confused, and they won't let you file. Tax identity fraud. The numbers are staggering. Staggering. It is 5 years ago, the IRS didn't even recognize tax identity fraud as a problem. Now, huge problem. Huge amount of resources being thrown at it. So, if you are filing electronically, first, make sure you download whatever updates. So if you use TurboTax, you got to download all the updates to the software, because it seems like every minute there are new updates that are coming down from the IRS. So you've got to download all the updates, and then fill out your tax form. If you have already filed your taxes, or if you have filled out the form but you haven't filed yet, make sure you download the updates and run your return through the system again, just to make sure you don't qualify for more, you don't owe any more, there aren't any penalties. You want to make sure you get this right. So the IRS.gov website has a whole bunch of information about this. They are ready to accept your tax return. If you've been the victim of tax identity fraud, you're probably going to want to talk to the IRS directly, or at least have an enrolled agent or a CPA contact the IRS on your behalf to see what's happening. That way you won't get shut out and shut down before you even file your return this year. 38 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Steve joins us on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program. Steve, you with us? Hello, Steve. All right, we don't know what happened to Steve. Let's try Len from Swanee. Len, are you with us?
I certainly am. How's it going?
Terrific. What's going on?
Okay, to make it short, I have a Florida condo, and on my desk right now I have a refi package from the big North Carolina bank that currently holds the note.
Okay.
There's a second home rider in there, but the problem is the last page is a borrower's certification, and the first thing says that we're going to assume occupancy in 60 days, and if we don't, they can call the loan. And so,
occupancy is a primary residence?
Yeah, basically it says, yeah, we're going to assume occupancy. And
but you have a second home rider on it.
There's a second home rider, and in the mortgage there's also an occupancy clause, but it, you know, it makes reference to this applies unless, you know, there's an agreement otherwise. So I didn't think too much of that because there is an exception and an out. But this page has no out. I mean, it's ironclad, and it says if you knowingly do not assume occupancy in 60 days, then they can call the loan or
it raise sounds the rate. Like some low-level doc prep person stuck that on there and didn't read the rest of the package.
Okay.
Did you call and ask yet?
Well, it's been too soon. I just got the package Saturday.
Oh, so they're not open.
Of course, the big banks aren't in business, and the lawyer isn't down in the Florida town where the condo is. They're not there either. So I didn't, you know, I told my wife, I said, we can't sign this.
Yeah, no, you really can't. You can't because, first of all, it's conflicting documentation. Mm-hmm. So you don't know which way it would go in court. But you don't want to sign something that you know isn't right. So I would, if it were me, I'd pick up the phone tomorrow and just say, hey, this is my favorite way to phrase it, by the way. Hey, I'm a little confused.
Okay.
So you know this is a second home for us, hence the second home rider. And yet, you want me to occupy the home as a primary residence in 60 days.
Right.
Which is it on this loan, exactly? And they may say, oh, sorry. What I'm hoping they're going to say is, sorry, we messed up.
That's what I'm hoping, too, because it's 2 points off the current mortgage.
That would be nice.
Yes, and so I was distraught when I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, my guess is that some person just didn't bother to read the package and just kind of went, oh, there's a stack of papers, and I'm going to go down the line and take one of each. Oh, and we'll just stick this one on the back. And that's kind of how I would play it. I would say, hey, somebody just kind of accidentally stick this on the back. Can we just sort of take it off and toss it and or just exit out and I'll, you know, I'll initial it and you initial it and we're all done? Because I'm ready to sign otherwise.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I would.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a reasonable approach. And by the way, I agree with your assessment of the economy and everything. I think that so many people are in delusion about it.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how we've all gotten to a place. It's like we're all sitting around a campfire and we're just telling stories about how great things are and hoping they will be and then they will be. But for me, there's like this big disconnect going on.
Yes, absolutely. You got to keep your eyes open.
Yeah, you sure do.
Okay, well, I appreciate your advice, and I will take it and call them tomorrow.
Sounds good, Len. Let me know what happens. 42 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Gling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Let's start with yours. Phil, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yeah, Phil, welcome to the Elyse Gling Show. How can we help you today?
I experienced a foreclosure last year.
I'm sorry about that.
They filed a foreclosure in November, and then it sold on the courthouse steps on January 2nd of this 12.
And how far back were you in terms of payments?
3 months.
Okay.
It
must make you pretty mad to hear that, like in New York, you can live in your house for 5 years without making a payment. Or you got dinged in 3 months.
Yes and no. I screwed up, so it was my fault. I'm not going to blame other people.
Okay.
But I was talking to an attorney this week, and he indicated that I may receive a tax liability on that foreclosure.
Was it primary residence?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, when you lose your house, don't you lose the obligation as well? How would I have made money to have a tax liability?
So it isn't that you made money. And you won't, I do not believe on a primary residence you will have a tax liability because of the law that was extended basically January 1st.
Okay.
So the way that the IRS looks at a foreclosure or a short sale, is there's a difference between what you owe and what they got for it.
Okay,
and then
I think
they forgive
got more than the, I think they got more than what I owed.
They got more than what you owed?
I'm pretty sure they did.
So did you get that money?
Negative. Not yet.
Okay. So...
I mean, I haven't... Let me put it back... Let me back up. I owed $290. They had it on the market for $335, and it sold. That's all I know at this point in time. I don't know what they actually got for it.
Okay. So if you owed $290, let's just say it sold for $335.
Okay.
But then they have the commission. They have the lawyer's fees.
Lawyers and all that, yeah.
The filing fees. My guess is that could eat up $30,000-$40,000 right there.
Agreed.
So I can't imagine how you made money on this. The good news is that you didn't lose money because the difference, the deficiency between what you owed and what it would have sold for, the IRS treats that as income. But not for primary residences, not this year.
Okay, okay.
So, I don't know what the attorney is really talking about.
I'm not sure either. That's why I called you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did.
I didn't understand it, so I figured someone with your expertise would.
So, the only thing I could imagine is maybe if they sold it for $335, which you know they didn't, and they you owed $290, let's say there was $5,000 that should get back to you somehow. Let's just say that's the case.
Okay.
In some weird, you know, smoke-filled room, that's how it's going to be. Well, fine. But it's a primary residence, so you wouldn't owe any tax on that because you can keep up to $250,000 tax-free.
Agreed. He was talking about the fact that they wiped out a liability, therefore I would owe taxes on the wiping out of the liability.
But he's not up to date. He doesn't know what he's talking about because for a primary residence, that was extended for this year. That was extended at the end of last year. It was one of the things that was up for grabs, and they did that. So, you know, my understanding is that that's not the case. And plus, you don't... What did you really lose here? Maybe it would be $5,000 or $10,000, and they forgave that as part of the bigger deal. But it sounds like you pretty much came out even, which is good. It's just unfortunate you had to go into foreclosure.
If it didn't come out even.
Yeah, I understand. But even if it didn't, you wouldn't know any taxes on that because the IRS is. If it was a second home, if it was an investment property, if it was a commercial building, then you would owe tax.
Okay. One more question, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. I hope I have the answer for you.
When I was talking to the same attorney, he suggested I contact a lawyer since I missed three payments, but they calculated it different. Let me explain. I travel a lot in my work. As a result of that, I always paid my mortgage 1 month ahead. At some point in time, which I didn't realize, Wells Fargo applied that whole payment to interest and no longer calculated it as 1 month ahead. Therefore, when I missed the first payment, they had it as a missed payment where I had it as using up that 1 month that I had paid ahead. You follow what I'm saying?
I do.
So in their mind, I was four payments behind. In my mind, I was three payments behind. Is that enough to go to a lawyer to try to rectify?
Well, the house is sold. So at some point in time, it doesn't really matter how many payments you were behind. It was how much you owed with taxes and fees and penalties and how much they got for the property.
Okay.
Now, if you felt like they did something unfairly and you were served a foreclosure notice inappropriately...
I never got served other than just received something in the mail that said we have foreclosed on your home.
Well, okay. So that may or may not have been enough, but there was something called independent foreclosure review, and you would have had to have applied through that. But now they've changed it, and I'm not quite sure how they've changed it. But the real question is, do you feel like somehow in the accounting of what you paid in and what was actually owed, do you feel like you got to the right number? Because maybe what the attorney is suggesting is that you have a conversation with Wells Fargo just to make sure the numbers were calculated correctly and that payment, that fourth payment, whatever you want to call it, didn't actually get applied inappropriately.
It was applied, but not the way I wanted it applied.
That's true, but
in
the total amount of payments.
The numbers at the end of the day, whether you go my accounting method or their accounting method, numbers came out the same.
Right. Now, I will tell you, lenders don't accept those payments in advance the way that you wanted it applied.
The first one did, okay, when Wachovia owned it or serviced it, they did, because I talked to them about it. And when it went to Wells Fargo, I did not, unfortunately, have that conversation, as I probably should have.
Right. So that's on you. But you know that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I appreciate your input.
I wish, Phil, it were different, because I can hear the frustration in your voice. And you must have had quite the reversal of fortune for this to get to this place.
I was out of job for 8 months, okay? What ticks me off is I applied for the modification while unemployed. The house sold on the courthouse steps January 2nd, the day after New Year. On the Friday before, at 4:45 in the afternoon, they told me I did not qualify for a modification, which left me absolutely no time to go get it fixed, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
And that's the part that probably irritates me the most. They get you in a box, and not only do they feel they control you, they actually do. And that's what's frustrating. I offered at that point in time to pay off the delinquency because I had found a job a week earlier, and they sent me to the lawyer, and the lawyer says, fine, you have to have it here by 9:45 on Tuesday morning, the 2nd. And obviously there's no way to get money out of a 401k or anything else at that rapidly, but they didn't care. They just went ahead with it anyway.
So
that's the frustrating part.
It's hugely frustrating. It's stupidly frustrating. I'd love to suggest that you take one more action.
What's that?
So I talked about this earlier on the show. There's a website called helpwithmybank.gov.
Yes.
I'd like you to go there and file a complaint against your lender, because that is the kind of behavior that makes everybody, if you tell your story there, I can promise you that there will be somebody who pays attention. And once you get the file number, I want you to send it to me. And
okay.
I will make sure that somebody pretty high up in the OCC sees it. Because it just doesn't give anybody a fighting chance. It's the kind of behavior that we've been fighting against. And part of it is in the state of Georgia. It's just, it can go very, very quickly. But I think it would be really helpful to get that complaint in writing, so that it can be routed around and people can see what's really going on. That's how I see my job anyway. When we talk about rebuilding America one house at a time, what I'm really trying to do is get government and corporations to understand that at the bottom of those mortgage numbers is an actual living, breathing person. It's you. It's your family. And you're trying to do the right thing. I want everybody to try and do the right thing. And too often over the last 7 years, people didn't make that a priority, doing the right thing, and I want them to do it now. That's what I want. 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 12:56 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to follow me on Twitter. I'm @Glink. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com. That's my website, folks. That's the place where you get access to all the cool content in thinkglink.com. and in the ThinkLink community, CBS News and Yahoo, Equifax Finance Blog, and all the other places in the world that we publish. Well, it all starts with the newsletter, and we've got now two weekly newsletters that are free. We have all kinds of cool stuff being planned this year because we are rebuilding America one house at a time, and we want to start with yours. And you need help with your small business, your credit, your money, your house, all the rest. It all comes to you right from the ThinkLink.com newsletter. 404-872-0750 is our number. Let's see if we can fit Dean in. Hey, Dean from Lawrenceville. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Elise. My daughter was out of work for about 8 months. She got behind on her mortgage, and she was with First Horizon, which I understand is a part of MetLife Mortgage or MetLife Bank. And she, the whole family was helping her try to stay current. But then the bank, First Horizon, offered her a deal where if she would pay four half payments by certified check, you know, and airmailed, or not airmailed, but, you know, priority mailed to them, and they got them on time, that they would refinance the mortgage at a lower interest rate and, you know, take care of her problem and everything. Well, she went through that. Like I say, the whole family was helping her. And then they came back and said, no, you don't qualify. So we ultimately, she has gone through the OCC. We wrote congressman
did she get a case number from the OCC when she filed her complaint?
Yes.
Can you send that to me?
She can. Yeah, we're driving right now. I don't.
Well, no, no, no. Don't do it while you're driving. Cause we always.
No, don't do that.
But if you could send that to me along with what happened, I will make sure that somebody pretty high up at the OCC sees it, because those kinds of promises make me madder than anything. Lenders, if you have it in writing that they have offered you a deal and they renege on that deal, man, nothing makes me madder. Because if you can't rely on what your lender's telling you, how are you ever going to do business? How is the lender ever going to do business? The world doesn't work when we don't live up to the promises we make. So, Dean, send that along, and I'll make sure that somebody sees it. Send it to me at thinklink.com. And drive safe. Enjoy the Super Bowl, everybody. The music's playing. That means our time is up. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter. Sign up for the free weekly newsletters at thinklink.com. And have a great week.